I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking hour?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Express yourself. Don't give it away, ladies and gents. Welcome to the Football Ramble. We find ourselves in the calm before the final. It's Friday, 9th of July. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Andy Russell.
And I'm the Jim Campbell Experience.
Hi, everybody. Happy Friday. Good to see you. And the Jim Campbell Experience. Is it, Jim?
Yep.
Tough guy, eh? Okay. Well, gentlemen, as I said at the start there, it's Friday, and that's a good thing. And we're a couple of days away from the final. And it's a strange feeling because there's one game left of this tournament, and we still have an extremely vested interest.
Yeah.
Which has never happened before. And it's an odd one, Jim, because normally when a tournament happens, you're the first sort of week or two of a tournament, depending on the size, but especially, you know, Well, I suppose now we've got 24 teams. That first phase of it, there's just games everywhere. You sort of, the game finishes and you get something to eat and you go, what's next? Oh, there's another game starting quickly. And it's you're like a child on Christmas Day, but Christmas Day lasts for about 2 weeks.
Yes.
And then you have a down day and you go, oh my goodness, teams are being eliminated. Oh, this is a bit, can't we just have this kind of festival experience forever? And as the tournament sort of drips on, you go, oh, we're losing this. Oh, okay. And then, oh, yeah, England have gone out. And then you kind of go, oh, yeah, there's a semi-final. Is it tomorrow night or the night after? I think, yeah, oh, yeah, that's right. And then, oh, the final, yeah, yeah, we'll watch that. And it's like, no, this has been a bit different.
Yeah, I mean, this feels a lot like the Christmas Perennium does, doesn't it? Like, where it's just like you're only...
Unbelievable.
You don't really know what time it is. You're just sort of like...
It's today,
time's gone all weird. You're just waiting for the next bit.
Is today the 23rd of December, Andy, is the question, because...
Yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah, but do you not think, though, that the difference is with Christmas Day, it's going to be good, but this Christmas Day...
This could be terrible.
This could be like, oh, you didn't read my Christmas list at all, did you?
Yeah. Well, so you could get the Mattel AT-AT, but it might not have batteries.
Well, in Europe, they have a thing called the Krampus, don't they, in some places?
Yeah, that's right.
Which is like the naughty kids get like an evil thing that's supposed to come for you on Christmas Day.
Rotten potatoes, sometimes.
Yeah, so, I mean, maybe that's more the comparison. But it is a weird feeling, isn't it?
Yes,
I can't, like, I can't wrap my head around it.
Mm.
Like,
because a final is a showpiece, it's not something that you have a vested interest in.
Yeah, exactly. It's true. Right? Like, every time a final comes along, you kind of go, where are you watching it? Yeah, I don't know.
You'd be like, oh, I'd love it for England to be involved in one of these. And then you start daydreaming. And now it's here. It still feels like a daydream. It still doesn't feel real. Like, I welled up at the end. I was not expecting to at all. It hit me really like a big wall of emotion. It was it was a beautiful, beautiful thing. Yeah. I sort of can't.
How dare you say that when England stole their way to the final?
Well, yeah. No, that was what I enjoyed most about it.
Crime is the secret ingredient.
Exactly, yeah. Whack it in the British Museum with everything else they stole. As I forget who, said someone brilliant said on Twitter.
Did you not find, though, at the moment on Twitter, you get these kind of... These rather bold tweets, as you do any day of the year, and you kind of think, is that? No, it's just somebody with a few followers and someone's screen. But you know, that's all a part. It's all a part of the 21st century life.
Absolutely. I mean, everyone wants us to lose. It's it's quite funny.
You think?
Yeah, well, I mean,
doesn't.
I mean, you know, again, I'm doing what Marcus is just talking about. There are so many memes going around,
like
a map of Europe where every country is Italy, apart from England.
And there's no way Spain want Italy to win. But
no,
I'm not saying they're pro England in any way at all. But I would be surprised if Spanish people, maybe even some French people, because the rivalry between France
Spanish and Spanish people definitely want England to win.
Right? Okay.
Definitely.
Because they absolutely love us and they welcome us every year, and we're so well behaved in that country that we build bridges that way. Yes, I'm being sarcastic, Scottish and Irish people. But Andy, you're in perhaps the best position of all the people that I know to give us the insight on who wants us to win and who wants us to lose in a Eurovision style format. Take it away, Andy Brassel.
Don't bring Eurovision into this when we're involved.
All right, in a Euro Union style. No, that's even worse. No, Andy, but we chatted the other day, all bollocks aside for a moment. We chatted the other day, and you, because I again assume that people, not that I give, do we have any support, you know? But what is the sort of take, if you like, that you've noticed in some other European countries? Not necessarily who you want to win, but what's the feeling going into the final?
We like to think we're different and everyone hates us, and that we're the Millwall of international football.
There's definitely a siege mentality with English fans, which has been to our detriment over the years.
Yes, massively.
But I don't think that is the case. And reading a lot and listening to a lot of what people are saying in other countries, like, people have found that England's story like quite curious and interesting.
Well,
and
Gareth Southgate one perhaps more specifically.
Yeah, but I think, as I said before, in terms of Germany, they're very keen on English academies. So the quality's there is absolutely no surprise to them. And it's making them have a rethink, or like a lot of German football people having a rethink about why their academies aren't producing quite what they want at the moment. And it is interesting, isn't it? The idea of having England, especially post Premier League, as some sort of academy yardstick.
Yeah.
But I think as well, there's a really interesting article in L'Equipe today about the atmosphere around the English team and the togetherness. And their contention that that is what's got England to this point, because they're enjoying each other's company. Mm. And they're having fun in a way that a lot of the other teams weren't, in a way that the French team didn't really seem to be having. They seemed tetchy and uncomfortable mm-hmm. and unsettled. Whereas the English team, to the rest of Europe, always look like they're having a good time.
Which is strange.
And you can underrate that.
Yeah, you can. Which is strange because you remember the scenes in the Stade de France after France won the World Cup. Obviously, they've won the World Cup, so there's going to be a bit of a celebratory mood. But the rap, you know, name, or the, I say the rap, the pop song, should we call it? I don't want to anger some of our fans when they mention all the players' names in the song and so on. And the feeling, and they seem to be a very jubilant mood, and there seem to be... Again, at least from where I was sat watching it on my phone, quite a togetherness with that side. But that was evidently not the case in this tournament. And we see other squads often sort of, you know, combust and so on. And it's not just England have a good feeling. Italy, Jim, look like they have a very, very good feeling as well. But I suppose maybe what Andy's saying, I haven't seen too many... videos of the Italian side, because probably, I don't know, maybe that's just not on my Twitter feed or whatever, or maybe they're not too bothered. But England certainly, in a PR sense, do come across more likeable these days.
Oh, absolutely. I think as well, it's about more than...
the team
it's about more than the memes, though, isn't it? It's about more than, oh, aren't they having a good time? They are actually a real sort of... They're iconic. They're already iconic. I mean, because Gareth Southgate, I mean... Him as a leader mm-hmm. is really a shining example of what can be achieved if you think, you know, if you take a step back, if you take a measured approach to things, you don't panic about the immediacy. It's an antidote for the British people are bored of experts. Do you know what I mean? It's an absolute it's a rebuttal of that nonsense that we've seen in society. And the team are a sort of conscious emblem of the positive things that need to be amplified in our society in a divided time.
Well, the thing is, it's not even political. Like, the idea that you should have respect for people and try and find common ground, I don't think is political.
But you know,
that seems to be Gareth Southgate's. No, you're right, and it shouldn't be. I ask you, though, Jim... Is Gareth Southgate as big a hero as Boris Johnson? That is my question.
Yeah, and before you answer that, Jim, let me give a bit of context there, which I think my friend and colleague Mr. Brassel is talking about.
Let's hope so.
La Gazzetta dello Sport have suggested that England have been allowed to keep the final because of Boris Johnson's opposition to the European Super League. I think it was even worded maybe that Boris Johnson was kind of like the saviour of European football. Yeah. yes, I mean, they've misunderstood the situation. They have.
They have. That's fair to say.
La Gazzetta dello Sport, yeah. But we'll crack on anyway. But they said.
So the hero who slayed the Super League.
Yeah, hero who slayed the Super League. It's incredible, isn't it? Mm. It is absolutely incredible. Well, seemingly, he can just wander through life doing anything.
I mean, it is amazing how you read this, Gazzetta editorial, and the bit where they say that, you know, England have basically been given a penalty as a favour.
Yeah.
It's not even the most offensive part of the article.
I mean, obviously there was talk that he knew about the Super League plans before it all went public as well, wasn't it? So they either weren't aware of that, or have, you know, glossed over it, shall we say.
Shall we say, Jim, yeah. So that's the situation. So Andy, what was your question again to Jim? If the England win the Euros, do we need to thank Boris Johnson?
It's been very difficult for the government to take any credit here, hasn't it?
They've had a go, though.
Apparently, they have had a go. Apparently, I read something saying that they were put out by Gareth Southgate's statement before the tournament, the open letter that he put out, because obviously it was all talk of unity and the values that the team bring, and it made it very, very difficult for them to keep their kind of, you know, stance of being anti taking the knee and things like that, and also claim any sort of association with England. So it's very, very, very good from Southgate to position England in a way where they stand for themselves and, you know, for their own political integrity.
Yeah. By the way, we should just sort of say that there is a petition to rename London Sterlingrad if England win the Euro. Yeah. So if
seize the means of production.
So if everybody can get behind that, that would be absolutely great. I mean, we can talk about the politics and all the rest of it, and I do find it quite interesting, and I think there is something to be said. But ultimately, they are a football team, and yeah. It is a game of football. And I think that is the beauty of football, isn't it? That it, I don't know about... Well, maybe it suspends our reality for a few weeks or lets us view things in a sort of slightly different way. Does it have an actual impact, these teams? You don't really know. Possibly. We would certainly hope so. And if they can win the damn thing, then that would obviously beef up that argument.
Absolutely. I think the England team have been politicised, whether they themselves like it or not, though, and their response to it has been absolutely magnificent. They are a set of genuine role models that are representing their country with actions rather than jingoism, effectively. And it's a beautiful thing to see that they are an absolute emblem. And it's weird to, as an adult man, to feel so proud of a group of strangers who are a lot younger than me. But I do.
What if they get thumped in the final and they don't try? Are you going to be proud of them? Hey, turn your tune, won't change your tune, won't
first you? Time they were in a final in my life, mate, apart from Le Tournoi. So.
There wasn't a final in Le Tournoi. I keep having to remind people of this, Andy, and it's frustrating me for crying out loud. But yes,
Le Tournoi and Natalie and Brilliant completist Marcus Speller.
But Andy Brassel, England. I mean, the journey began, of course, with a 1-0 win against Croatia, and it's funny to think back how criticised Gareth Southgate was with his team selection there.
Me and Luke said it was perfect at the time, though. So
yeah, I mean, I was trying to hold back people on Twitter saying, well, actually, I think the reason why he's put Trippier there and so on. And some people were having it, and it's fair to say some people were not. But fast forward to the semi-final, when England go to back three, back five in the second period of extra time and could have killed the game off 3-1, but actually chose to play in a safer way to just make sure... You know, the last few minutes. Yes, Denmark were down to 10 men, I understand. I'm not saying this is some sort of, you know, Brazil 1970 just before the fourth goal goes in kind of moment. But Andy, it shows you how England fans in these couple of weeks have changed. Not even a few years, but in these few weeks Southgate.
As I was saying to you, like, there's nothing as convincing as results, obviously. But as I was saying to you when we were talking about this off-air earlier, Marcus, I think...
Use fewer swear words this time, Andy.
Okay, I'll do my best.
And you're wearing a lot more.
I think the Ukraine game is really important. And it's funny because when you look at the rest of the moments in the Euro, it kind of feels, I don't know if like, it sounds weird, the game in which England scored the most goals was like the least exciting because there was like so little jeopardy in it. You know, it was such a degree of comfort and there was such an enormous gap
I was all right with that.
England and Ukraine.
I thought that was just the tonic actually to be honest. But
no that was actually going to be my point, even if it was not in terms of atmosphere and in terms of what it might have done for a neutral. I don't think it stands up amongst the great games of this great tournament, but I think it's really important in trusting Southgate. You know,
yes.
Giving the people a little bit of what they want, and obviously Ukraine were slightly complicit in that. But yeah. I think that is quite important because now it feels that after the Ukraine game, there is a sense for a lot of people of, we can actually do this.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a sense that that's there if we need it. You know, the concern was that, you know, we hadn't really got out of second gear. So can we get out of second gear? Mm-hmm. And now we know that we can.
Yeah. Well, I think people wanted... Miguel Delaney wrote a piece saying that England, at one point in England's, forgive me if I get this wrong, Miguel, but at one point in England's history, there was that glorious failure and they were involved in some great games in the World Cup. For example, in 98 against Argentina.
It's what we're conditioned to want, isn't it?
Exactly. You want that kind of let's
the drama.
Yeah, let's burn brightly, even if it's just for four games, maybe five if we can. Not in those games, but let's have a moment where we burn brightly. We believe for 10 minutes or maybe 20 minutes, dare I say, that, my goodness, maybe we can play a bit, you know, maybe England can go on and do something. And then eventually England go out and you don't want it to be with a whimper. You want it to be glorious failure. And obviously McGill's piece was much better than what I'm describing now. I don't want to do the man a disservice. But I would, you know, go and read that piece. But when England were in the group stages, especially after the Scotland game, I think people thought, No, hang on. We turn up to these tournaments. We go out in the quarterfinals if we're lucky. And we want a few moments here. We want a Gazza goal, or we want a Beckham free kick, or we want something like that. We're not even getting that. And because of what happened at Euro 2016, okay, we had a bit of cheer when beating Wales 2-1 because of the nature of the injury time winner. But you think about 2016, ultimately it was crap. 2014, very, very awful. Poor. It really was. The whole time really under Hodgson was not good. And it was a shame because I wanted Hodgson to get the job, and I do
but
I
what
love
I find,
the man. But just to finish, Andy, 2010 was also poor as well. So I think England were like, just give us a... We go out after a barnstorming 2-2 or something
and
like
also,
that.
Let's
and people
forget,
were worried, Andy, in the group that that was not going
to
happen.
But what I find weird is if you go back to the group games of even the successful tournaments...
Yes.
96 against Switzerland.
Yeah.
Not great.
Yeah, but you had...
And then you go... So you're talking about defining a tournament on the possibility of, you know, glorious knockout failure. And actually, if you go back to the 1990 group games...
90 is a better example. 96 is not a good example. Because they beat the Netherlands 4-1.
Yeah, but by which time you've already got 4 points?
Yes, but the point is they still had that moment.
The Scotland game could have gone either way. The Switzerland performance wasn't fantastic. So the idea that Gareth Southgate, by, I don't know, making England a little more conservative, is like killing the spirit of what England normally do in great group games, is fucking nonsense.
No, I agree with that.
I think that spirit needed exercising anyway, didn't
it? No, I agree with that. I suppose I'm sort of tapping into that mindset of people were worried. And I'm not saying they were right to be.
I think it's to do with the composition of the current squad, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. That was like, you know, take the handbrake off, Gareth, all that kind of stuff. Play everybody. We want to play exciting and attacking football. That phrase, let's have a go. Let's go at them. Mm. Let's play on the front foot. All this kind of stuff.
But you have to have a strategy
and a plan.
The thing is, the people who were saying that, I guess, don't watch international football because that is not how it's done.
It's not how you win it, is it? And we know that, and Southgate has studied the teams that have done it. It's based a lot of our tournament.
Southgate has watched World Cups and European Championships.
Who'd have thought? Sometimes from on the pitch.
Yeah, exactly.
Sounds like he does know what he's doing.
But that was the feeling, though. As I said, I'm not saying I agree with it. You know, I think, and Luke was very vocal as well, and you could see what he was trying to do. As I said, much like the French in 2018, but you could see that there's a little bit of upset here, especially after the Scotland game, because it is a derby game and people were very, very disappointed. People wanted to see Grealish, they wanted to see a couple of more attacking players.
I remember feeling very, very deflated after that game.
Oh, completely.
Thinking that, like, oh god, it felt like the beginning of, this is going to be how it always is.
Exactly.
You're
going to
get really
hyped up,
and it will be a damp squib, because, and you won't even have the enjoyable moment.
Exactly, because and I realise this, that
so conditioned to it.
Well, but the thing is, though, Jim, where were these sort of perceived good moments? I mean, it has been famine for England for a long,
well,
long
exactly,
time.
Well, exactly. Yeah, I mean, and I was going to say earlier, there's a whole generation of people that haven't, you know, that don't remember Euro 96, and like don't remember Euro 2004, which was a laugh, let's be honest, who have just known England to just be really flat and boring and not even to have those moments that you cherish.
Yeah, because Euro 2004 is a good example. Even though England only played 4 games, at least there were some goals in that tournament, which was quite rare for England. You know, the 4-2 against Croatia, you know, Rooney got us all going. 2006, it was disappointing. It never really got going. And I think people were worried about that. But of course, then we played Germany in the second round. But before we talk about that and one or two other bits and pieces of England, I just want to say that the final episode of On the Continent is out now. Andy, you and Dotton were joined by Nicky Bandini to talk all things Italy and look back over a magnificent tournament for them. So get that over at Football Ramble Presents, because there is another team in the final, isn't there?
Apparently so.
All right, chaps, let's go for a quick break.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Difficult year it has been from this man, Casper Dober. COVID twice, appendicitis, a teammate stole his watch that was worth $85,000, and yet his first start in this tournament, he delivers a wonderful goal.
And it was a wonderful goal, everybody. Welcome back to the Football Ramble with myself, Andy, and Jim.
It was also a really long time ago that someone stole his watch, but, you know.
All right, Andy. It still happened. Yeah.
How does he know?
Yeah.
He's got no way of knowing how long it's been now.
Love the game. Now hit subscribe. Please send us a note. We won't reply. Email show at footballramble.com. Show at footballramble.com. We don't call it soccer.
Though, if we wanted to, that would be fine. We've got one here from Claire Tooley. This is probably why I have this in mind. I'm at a Nashville SC game right now, and although Soccer Moses does not play guitar every game, that honour goes to a different musician each time. The photo attached is what he does when there's a red card. And Claire sent a photo of Moses holding up a big red tablet at the front of the ground that reads, "Thou shalt not."
Oh, my goodness. If you haven't seen Soccer Moses, then Google it, for crying out.
Yeah.
So a guy called Robert Courtner got in touch with me as well, saying, "Just heard the latest podcast, thought to throw this your way. Soccer Moses is actually the guitar player for Jars of Clay. When he isn't playing, he's a barber in Nashville, and he's a huge Arsenal fan. Side note, English fans need to realise that we ruin everything of theirs, the language, occupation of the Americas, and football."
He's in the band Jars of Clay.
Jars of Clay, yeah. Well, apparently Claire Tooley is saying that it's a different person every time, so perhaps the Jars of Clay fella has been Soccer Moses, and it's...
I love
it. Is he
this.
Like the Phantom? I presume so, yeah.
I mean, you're not short guitar players.
Do you know the band Jars of Clay?
No. Have you heard of them?
No.
I've heard of them, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I don't know them that well.
They've been around for a long time.
They have, yeah.
Mind you, it's Soccer Moses, you know. You don't get a young man in fact.
Yeah. I mean, as you say, in Nashville, everyone's going to play guitar.
Yeah.
Like, the stewards are probably as good as Soccer Moses. Like, the players can probably do it.
You can't have like a clean-shaven 21-year-old. It's Soccer Moses. No, it isn't.
I don't think it's his beard, Andy. I don't think it's a real beard.
Do you reckon you go on to pedal steel once you've conceded a goal?
Possibly.
That's how it works.
Possibly.
Right.
Possibly. Jim, you got an email yourself, though.
From Bob Silverio. I mean, is there a podcast in the world with listeners who have better names than ours?
I definitely doubt it.
I absolutely doubt it. So thanks to all of your parents, I guess. So Bob says, "We've been hearing a lot of complaints that the penalty shootout favours the teams taking the first kick. The ABBA system has been tried without success as well. The obvious solution is simultaneous penalties. You will need the fourth official on one side and the referee on the other, with an assistant on each side. The stadium announcer can blow the whistle after a signal from the referees. Imagine the beautiful chaos. It's also great for television and will add immeasurably to the drama." So I love that. Could you imagine, like, a split screen?
Yeah.
See both at once. I mean, it's already tense. It would be incredible, wouldn't it? Which way do you look as well if you're in the middle, if you're stood in the middle of the pitch?
Yeah, I don't think we need that, do we?
You'd love to see it with the when your team's not involved.
Yeah,
just to see what it's like.
I don't know. Would you though? I still get like with a penalty shootout, even if it's not England or you know anybody I'm into involved, I still get a touch nervous.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Of course, the drama is unrivaled.
Oh my goodness!
The ABBA system's quite interesting. Gerard Piqué was asking for that on Twitter, wasn't he? After Spain lost,
was he?
Yeah.
So we'll see. I got an email here from Chris Ure who says, "I have a general question. Have any of you had family events/birthdays completely ruined by football? I only ask as my birthday is on the 11th of July, so 3 years ago, as we all remember." Well, England lost in a semi-final. Despite the glorious first 5 minutes, I've never been more miserable on a birthday. Yeah. 3 years on, I find myself in a similar position again. Hopefully this time my joy lasts more than 5 minutes as I proceed to ignore my family throughout the day. My birthday is just days after that. So, yes, I will have a little bit of a respite if it doesn't go our way on Sunday. But, I know what you mean. It's an interesting one, that, Chris.
Mine's June the 18th, so I was lucky enough to see England smash the Netherlands 4-1 in Euro 96, we were talking about earlier. But yeah, generally, if England play on that day quite often, and they can be very underwhelming. So it has certainly had a negative impact as well. But you've got to be careful with these things, haven't you? Mm-hmm. If it's I was going to get married on the 10th of June. That was so short-sighted. That was so short-sighted, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was.
That could have been a problem every couple of years.
I can't. If it's a tournament year and a friend of mine says, we could get married, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Very pleased for you. I'll be more pleased if you have that wedding in August.
Yeah. I suppose it's more socially acceptable to say, can I simply join on Zoom? these days, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true.
But I'm just interested to see what Gazzetta's next column's going to be. Like if England were to score a penalty in the final, would it be a gift to Chris? Or an early birthday one for Marcus?
Maybe, yeah. Or something to do with Boris Johnson, oddly.
Yeah,
but they'll find a way.
Certainly.
They'll find a way.
He'll parachute in, won't he?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, yeah, there's been no talk, has there? There was talk that they might have a bigger attendance for the final, building on the, what was it, about 64,000 for the Denmark game. And everyone was like, what?
66,000?
I mean, now you're talking. Now you are talking. But of course, you know, mentioning England in the group stages and then how Southgate managed to kind of just ignore really some sections of the media and some fans were saying, and even in the ground actually, you know, booing after the Scotland performance. And again, I sort of understand it because it did seem quite lackluster,
and it was raining.
But against Germany, 2 games later. It was a rather different story. And this is when I think people thought, hang on a minute, because Southgate to switch it to a 3-4-3. Now, I've said for a while, I don't like England playing a 3-4-3. I said before the tournament, I think England are a little bit soft at the core. Well, Harry Maguire and John Stones have certainly, up to this point, I stress, have certainly, you know, given me two fingers and everything.
Well, Maguire had probably his best game against Germany.
He was magnificent.
He was amazing.
And also Rice and Phillips in the centre of the pitch have come on leaps and bounds as well. And and against Germany in a 3-4-3 to match them up, you know, it was impressive, Jim. And again, it let everybody see what Southgate and Holland are doing. Steve Holland, I should specify. We're not getting tips from Frank de Boer. What they are doing, and again, it's that kind of trust, and people were like, I think this is okay, and England put Germany away with 2 goals, and the feel-good factor was ramped up to a level that few of us have seen before.
Absolutely, and again, similar to the Ukraine game in a way, it was not, when I referenced the Ukraine game, what I mean is that everyone has been a bit frustrated that we got this brilliant attacking talent, so we're not just like, you know, tearing it up and scoring loads of goals. When that actually happened, you were like, right, we can do this if we need to. It's great to have it in the locker. I think with the Germany game, it was similar with switching the formation.
Yeah.
It shows you the plan is really detailed. Mm-hmm. And these players are comfortable in a lot of different systems. And it's not just one particular player in one particular position. A lot of these players can play across different places in different systems for different opposition with a different tempo. Just everything appears to have been thought of.
Yeah.
And they are just ticking off challenges, really.
Yeah, and when you say that there's different
challenges for different things. Because it's always that thing, isn't it, Andy, before tournaments, people say, well, what's your starting 11 for England? Mm, mm. And therefore, that should be the starting 11 going into every single game along the way.
Which is quite an old-fashioned way of looking at
things. It's an extremely old-fashioned way. I understand it from a fan's point of view when you think, who's your best 11? You're, in your mind, you're thinking, we're up against a good team. Even that's flawed. But obviously, I enjoy the chat as a purely as a fan. And that's absolutely fine and valid and enjoyable, we want to stress. We don't want to come over too beardy about this. Soccer Moses. But actually, when it gets to the reality of the matches and so on, you would pick Sancho for one game. You would pick Saka for another game. You put in maybe Grealish for another game. There's all these options which England fortunately have in those positions in particular. But he's even rotated his squad to keep at times. There's obviously a core which you need, but he's rotated. He's used them well, Andy. And that's
why, as we said before,
and the freshness has been important.
Yeah, and it's why we said before that Italy and England have actually got quite a lot in common in the way that they've been governed by Mancini and Southgate. But I do think the Germany game is super important. I think because we've talked about the psychological element of playing Germany quite a lot, but the fact that at that point Southgate manages to completely cocoon the players from that, or the players manage to cocoon themselves
as a group,
whichever way you look at it, the fact that they're able to say none of this matters, let's just play the game, follow the script, and it'll all be fine, and they did, they turned it up at exactly the right point in the last part of the game, and the idea of not being fettered by a national history and not letting all the other chat come in, I think is really, really important.
Yeah, and if England, let's forgive me for doing this, England fans, but if England were to say lose on penalties in the final, obviously it would be gutting and it would be awful. But I don't think it would set England back in the way it did in the past. Certainly not, you know. Or if there were certain things. I mean, I say that now, but I just think the way that they're trying to progress and the way Southgate goes on about we're writing our own stories, different group of players, that I think that's the crucial bit here. And I think as well his comments after the Germany game, Jim, were interesting when he said, you know, well, if you change the system and you mix it up and you lose, you know, you're dead, is what he said, obviously sort of touched tongue in cheek. Mm. But he's got a point there. They were bold calls that some England managers would perhaps be scared to make. I mean, there's one England manager in particular who I remember saying that if you don't pick certain players, the pressure to pick certain players is immense, because maybe back in those days, you know, this would have been about, I don't know, it's in the past. I don't want to betray the my sources. But it was a case of if you don't pick certain players, then the media can really put pressure on your job. Mm. And so in terms of keeping the job that you love and your income,
and
you
doing the job, away.
That's it. And so to make these bold calls that Southgate has done so far has been quite something.
Absolutely. And I think he has changed so much of the nature of what the England job is by perhaps being a bit more statesmanlike, being very methodical, as we've discussed before. His whole demeanour is very, very considered, and what they put out there and how much they've actually invited us as fans and also the media into the process. You know, that there aren't, you know, obviously I'm sure there are some things that they keep secret, but they are very open about how they work.
You'd hope so, wouldn't you?
Yeah, of course. about how they work, what they want to achieve, you know, and just what their expectations are. And also, to go back to your earlier point about, you know, what happens if England lose to Italy on penalties in the final, well, obviously that would be devastating. We'll all be devastated. But the point is England have got to a final for the first time since 1966, blah, blah, blah. Of course, we have a huge advantage with so much of it being here, but, you know, those are the facts of it.
And that happens in every tournament.
Yeah, it's not unusual.
Someone's at home.
If it comes a bit nervy in the stadium, sometimes that can go against you. But I take the point, it is an advantage.
But also, I think as significant, and if not more significant, is that we beat a powerhouse in a knockout game for the first time since, again, 1966. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think you can count Spain in 96, because I don't think they'd quite hit the heights that
I know what you're saying. Yeah.
I think that changes the DNA of England in international tournaments, and that confirms the reset that I think we hoped would be the case in 2018.
But that's so much more for the public side than in the camp.
But, which can, and I think it's less these days because of the good work Southgate and all have done in that bubble. But that nervousness or that pressure can filter through to the players somewhat.
Maybe. I think he's shielded.
Southgate won't always be England manager. Another manager may handle that in such a way.
Not only has he shielded them quite well from that, I think he's created a culture where they've got each other's backs, really. Mm-hmm. And I think they're not really as susceptible to that as they might have been in the past. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously we've heard about how factions between players of certain clubs is a thing of the past. I thought what was really interesting, I think that Ben Chilwell said about, funnily enough, the Chelsea and Manchester City players felt closer almost because they'd went through the Champions League final together.
Isn't that mad?
Which is
utterly remarkable.
In an England context, that's something amazing. Yeah. That says about the environment that's been created in the last 3 or 4 years with England.
Yeah.
But certainly from a public perspective, beating Germany, beating the bogeyman, that definitely gives Southgate some room.
Totally.
And I mean, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
But in terms of the players, I honestly think, cliche of cliches, they just think it's another step on the road.
Yeah, I sincerely hope that as well. And so we've not got to the end of that road where we want to be, which is holding the trophy, of course. But your point about the squad is very, very interesting, you know, certain factions and so on. Imagine if you are a player who, say, Lingard or Watkins, who were nearly there but didn't quite do it. Imagine what they're feeling now. Or someone like James Maddison. You know,
well, Jesse Lingard's been watching the games, isn't he?
No. But as in, but imagine. Okay, say someone like James Maddison, for example, and you can point to a handful of other, Emil Smith Rowe, for example, another one. Imagine what they're looking at, going, I want a bit of that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That's the feeling now. Whatever I've got to do, and that will obviously help in theory the performance levels at their clubs. That's what's going on here. There's none of this kind of club first before country nonsense. No, you can absolutely love both, and you can turn up to England and put in all your passions and desires and all the rest of it like you do at club level. And this idea that, I think it was Paul Scholes who felt that some players went to England and used it as a shop window to get a better move. Now, that's just the opinions of one man, whether he's right or not. But again, all this sort of crap, which wasn't that long ago, it seems to be come and get involved and play around in the pool with some inflatables and then go and play. Yes, of course, this tournament has been largely played at Wembley for England, but look at what it's doing. You know,
get in the pool, have an ice cream,
and then get the rave on.
I think that's it. There's been an understanding in recent days. I mean, the unicorn has had so much of the spotlight because of Bukayo Saka. But, you know,
Scotland's national animal. They'll be furious about that.
I never thought about that.
The flamingo's done his bit as well.
Yeah.
So's the swan.
Yeah.
Jadon Sancho was on the dolphin, wasn't he?
It's incredible.
The Dolphin had a great quarterfinal.
It is incredible. I mean, we've talked a lot. Obviously, you're on the continent. You talk about Italy a lot, but a word on them. I mean, Italy, they have been...
They're the best team in the tournament.
Yeah, you would say
they were from day one, and they still are.
Although they weren't the best team in their semi-final.
Yes.
Which is quite a big difference with England's semi-final.
It is, but it showed you the character of that Italian side to come through that game.
Well, this is what I'm so impressed by. I can't, other than them having someone sent off and weathering that storm, I can't think of a situation they haven't faced that they haven't stood up to. Mm. But they haven't passed every test.
I mean, they haven't been behind, but again, I think this idea of, what are you going to do if you're going to go behind?
I don't think that would stop them playing their game.
I don't have this idea that Chiellini will go, oh, crap.
I've never experienced this before. What do we do?
Yeah.
Have we lost now?
Well, off the pitch. There's no point in playing the last half an hour 1-0 down or whatever it could turn out to be. But I mean, yes, I think that Italy actually... Again, this battle-hardy side with certain huge characters and the manager. I think that the home advantage that England have, you would definitely think that siege mentality will play into their favour. I mean, I'm creating the narrative here for them, I suppose. There will be a good presence of Italian fans at the game. Yeah. We saw that in the semi-final.
Yeah.
I believe that they might even fly over about 1,000 or 2,000 for like 12 hours, so they manage to, sort of skirt around the rules or whatever it may be. So there will be a little bit of a presence, of course. But, I mean, Andy, you know, the way they started the tournament against your pre-tournament favourites, Turkey, and how they've gone
on. Embellishment with every telling.
Absolutely,
I like
right.
It.
Absolutely,
that's
right.
The way it should be.
And the performance against Belgium was superb.
I think that's interesting, actually, the fact that their best performance was away from Rome.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about home advantage and clearly playing three games in Rome and that incredible opening to the tournament and, you know, the ceremony, as we talked about before, mm-hmm. before the actual game, that was all huge, and it made us all feel in the moment,
yep.
didn't it?
Yep.
But the fact that they've been able to flourish beyond that, and they mm-hmm. did have that pinnacle in Munich, I think is pretty impressive.
Exactly. And also as well, when we say that they were, you know, Spain were the better side in that semi-final, I mean, they were, but Italy on the ropes might be a bit too much to say, but remember, people, the penalty shootout is very much a part of the match.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Chiellini set the tone. Jorginho finished it off. Yeah. Look how great they were in that shootout. I know they missed a kick. But again, that doesn't live in isolation, that penalty shootout. It is a part of that football match.
It's a funny one, isn't it? Because obviously, you know, Switzerland had a situation where they had two in a row and they looked really, really, mm-hmm. they really lacked confidence in the second one. You could say the same of Spain as well, because they had two in a row, yeah. and you feel like two in a row is a stretch. But with Italy, you feel like, oh, no they'd
well,
still be...
Well, there's a stat, isn't there, I think, that no side has won two in a row at a Euros.
Yeah.
But I find that some of
this
the outlets...
This could be a bit of a misnomer.
Well, some of the outlets are sort of cherry-picking just Euro stats, because
yes.
in World Cups, they have won two. The people have won two in a row. Do you know what I mean? Is that different, really?
No.
No, it's not. It's a huge international tournament, so I wouldn't pay too much attention to that. But hopefully Italy won't get the chance, because it'll all be done and dusted by half time.
Marcus, you're making me nervous. See, the weird thing now as well is this is uncharted territory for all of us as England fans, but Italy have been my favourite team to watch through the Euros. I've been saying throughout
you
it.
May
like,
not be saying
well,
that.
Quite, yeah. So, but normally I would be preparing for a final with there being a team that I wanted
mean.
To see win.
Yeah.
And were England not there, that would be Italy.
Yeah.
So it's a really... Well, I don't know what to do with myself.
The very relevant question every time is, who do you want to win in the final?
Yeah.
It's not relevant anymore for English people, of course, which again is a rather unique thing. But I want to finish, if I may, with a quote from Sven.
Obviously.
Sven gave
Do you
his...
do this before you go to bed? Like, with your wife?
It's a Sven app you can get. And if there isn't one, somebody get on that. And I'll have some of the profit. Sven-Göran Eriksson said, because of their pace, solidity and scoring options, I have a feeling it will be England's day. Has he ever been wrong about anything other than his team selection for England, Jim?
With England in the tournament? I'll leave that for the listeners to decide.
Don't answer that. Before
Started
we go,
Started laying
Andy,
those foundations at the beginning of the century.
Yeah, with regards to that,
as it will be known,
with regards to that sentence, first half good, second half maybe a bit more questionable. Just before we go, it's time to announce the final winner of our Euros Patreon competition. Every Friday throughout the Euros, we have been giving away a brand new TV thanks to our good friends at Toshiba. Today is no exception. So well done to Kevin Fisher. Go on,
well
Fisher.
Done.
How about that? Kevin Fisher, you have got a big old television coming to you, my friend. That's our last giveaway of the summer. But please keep an ear out for any future competitions on our Patreon. Besides, you can gain access to all Ramble shows ad-free, exclusive live streams and weekly bonus episodes exclusive to our subscribers. So sign up and get involved at patreon.com/footballramble. On tomorrow's show, Kate, Luke and Vish will be previewing the final itself. My goodness. Until then, thank you very much, Andy Brassel.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jimmy Campbell.
It's Vindaloo. It's Vindaloo. In motion, it is Vindaloo.
And so on. Hot and spicy. Thank you very much, everybody. Have a good one.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.